Blog Talk Radio.
Your host tonight is the eating disorder pro, Dr. J. Renee Norton. She comes to you live from Cincinnati, Ohio, home of the Bengals, the Reds, and of course, the Norton Center for Eating Disorders. If you or a loved one is struggling with obesity, anorexia, bulimia, emotional eating, or if you're just worried about food pollution, then you'll want to unhook and tune in.
Good evening and welcome to the Eating Disorder Pro Show. I'm Dr. Amy Norton and I am the Eating Disorder Pro. Thank you so much for joining us. I'd also like to thank you for following me on Twitter and liking us on Facebook. My staff and I are very grateful for your comments and questions, and hopefully you've heard from us when you have reached out and we tried to get back to you just as quickly as we can. That's very, very important. It's very gratifying to get the comments and the questions. So keep them coming. We love it. So just to recap, we've had a four-week series here since my sort of aha, incredible, awakening, turnaround kind of experience. So just to refresh your memory about that, in show number one in this series, I talked about how I went from high risk of an imminent vascular disorder to virtually no risk. We talked about the EndoPAT, which is a test that measures the vascular effectiveness of the heart. It does that by actually measuring what's going on in both arms, and it's a very reliable test. And my score went from a 1.48, which puts me at high risk for an imminent vascular event, to a 3.04, which so far no one who uses the equipment has heard of. And as I explained in that show, and as I have explained since, I did that by getting sunshine. I either got a half an hour of sun outside, or I got a few minutes of sun using a UVB sun lamp. So that's a pretty extraordinary result, and it's changed my life. I think it's going to change the lives of other people, my patients in particular, and people who follow me. And I hope that there's something here that you can take away that has even one-tenth the impact that this has had for me and some of my patients, because I think it's really gratifying and it's really exciting to be able to take control of your destiny, to be able to do something when you are facing a really serious, what appears to be untouchable or unchangeable disorder or disease. I'm hoping that this gives you hope and that you will learn something in this series that, if it doesn't really change your life, it may even save your life, but at least it has a positive impact on you. So in show number two, we talked about cholesterol, vitamin D, and the sun, and the relationship of those three things and why they are so important. And in a nutshell, what we said was that the body has to have cholesterol sulfate and it has to have vitamin D3. And we make vitamin D3 and cholesterol sulfate in the skin when it is exposed to the sun. There's sulfur in the air and in the environment and even in the soil. So you should take your shoes off when you're gardening for a few minutes and just let your feet get really dirty. I do. I usually don't do it on purpose, but I wear clogs and my feet get dirty all the time, and I'm not nearly as upset about it as I used to be. Anyway, back to I am digressing here. So back to the cholesterol, vitamin D, and the sun. We talked about in that show how important they are, how they are made in the skin, how with all of the sunscreen that we wear and the fact that we don't farm anymore and we if we do go out for recreation, we cover up or we slather the sunscreen on, we're just not getting the vitamin D anymore. And most people know about the vitamin D and know that they need it, but very few people, I think, know about the cholesterol sulfate. I certainly didn't. So we talked about how incredibly important cholesterol sulfate is, vitamin D3 is, and how it can really only be made when the sun shines on the skin or if you have a UVB lamp. And just FYI, what I have found out, I've been further researching the UVB lamps, wondering if they are as good for you. UVB light is the light that actually causes cancer if you get too much of it. Don't run away. Keep listening. However, if you just get the recommended amounts, which is just a few minutes, it is the best source, the most potent source for creating cholesterol sulfate and vitamin D3. The sun has both UVB and UVA, and it is the UVA that damage to the skin, wrinkles and sagging and that sort of thing. So it's okay. It's good. It's amazing. It's really important, according to Dr. Seneff, who was our guest last week. It's important and really important and really healthy for you to get limited amounts of the sun. Dr. Seneff took the position that as long as you are tan and you are not burning your skin, the more you get, the better. And I totally get that. I just think I want everybody to be very careful. I don't know if people can exercise caution and we get out in the sun and we forget what we're doing and it's easy to burn. So just to be very clear, burning, not good. Sunning in moderate, very moderate amount, very good. You'd be surprised. It doesn't take very much at all. They say a half an hour of sun creates 10,000 IU of vitamin D. Not really sure that that's exactly true. I'm still working on that, but I'll let you know. I do know that a few minutes of the UVB lamp can create significantly more vitamin D3 and cholesterol sulfate than the sun, and we'll talk more about that. And then show three with Dr. Stephen Lamb, and he has been using the Endopat, which was the test I mentioned, for years. And what he said was that he had never seen a result over a 3-point. And initially, he said that he thought it was probably operator error. In other words, he implied that either the first test or the second test were wrong. Then when I pointed out to him that my blood work were completely consistent with what we saw in the Endopat, he was impressed, he said. It's interesting. He still asked me initially why or how we did it, but eventually when I shared with him how we did it, I think he was very impressed with the results. I don't know if he was confident in the method, but he was gracious about it. And then that leads us to Dr. Stephanie Seneff, and I credit her really with saving my life. I hope at some point you will feel the same way about her. Her research is just amazing. It isn't just Dr. Seneff who is doing this research. She has a lot of company. There are many other people, but she has certainly taken charge, or headed up the charge, and is really instrumental in changing the way people look at cholesterol, in this case, many things, but this is one of the, this is what we're talking about right now. So we're talking about her role in changing the way we are looking at cholesterol. She's saying, in effect, it's not too little, it's not too much cholesterol, it's too little of the right type of cholesterol that's really causing our cholesterol problems. So it's completely counterintuitive. So that's where we are today. What's been happening with me since last week is that, and throughout this process, really, I notice that when I am speaking to people, there's a believability factor. And basically, they just don't believe me. It's really hard for people to fathom what I'm talking about. Even when I show them the results, they can look at the results and go, wow. And it seems like everybody I know is an engineer. So, of course, you know, I have to show them the proof. And so that's, you know, that's a frustration. But what I think I'm running into is that we have been so brainwashed into believing things that are untrue. It's really hard for us to wrap our heads around the truth. So tonight, we are going to visit a number of myths about the sun, about cholesterol, and about vitamin D. And I'm just going to lay them out, the myths and the truth. So here we go. Let's start with the sun, because that's the source, and that's, you know, that's what we're really talking about. The sun, for the last, I'd say, maybe 20 years has been so demonized. It's so feared that people won't let their little children go outside and play unless they are lathered up with sunscreen. And in addition to which, it's very difficult for people to trust the sun. So myth, too much sun is unhealthy. Truth, far too many of us have taken this advice to heart and as a result, avoid the sun. But without the sun, we do not produce the two hormones that are as critical to our survival on an individual basis as the sun is to the survival of the earth. And that's, of course, vitamin D3 and cholesterol sulfate. Many Americans are deficient in both. They usually know they're deficient in vitamin D3. I doubt that anybody knows they're deficient in cholesterol sulfate. I certainly didn't. Vitamin D3 deficiency among Americans is, as I said, fairly well known, whereas cholesterol sulfate is not, but they're both made when the sun interacts with sulfur from the air to produce them in our skin. And they are both absolutely critical to our health and longevity. Myth. The most likely cause of skin cancer is overexposure to the sun. Hold on to your seats. The truth is, research shows that it is the ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 fat. The ratio, how many times have we talked about this in the past? The ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 fat that we eat and not the sun that is causing various types of cancer, including skin cancer. Specifically, omega-6 fats such as canola, corn, grapeseed, sunflower, safflower, soybean, and rice bran oils act as a stimulator for cancer, while omega-3 fats such as the type found in fish or flaxseed oil act as inhibitors of the development and progression of a range of human cancers, including melanoma. The researchers, this was taken from Cancer Research 2000, August 1, volume 60, pages 4139 through 4145. So, Cancer Research Journal of Cancer Research. So I think it's pretty solid. That's interesting though, right? So I don't know if you're aware, we've talked about it before, but just to refresh your memory, we eat about 30 to 1 omega-6 to omega-3, or most of us do. My ratio turned out to be 1 to 1 in my last bit of test, which was pretty exciting. I was very happy to see that. But most Americans are eating a ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 at about 30 or more to 1. That's too much. So again, the omega-6 oils that you don't want to eat are canola, corn, grapeseed, sunflower, safflower, soybean, and rice bran oil. Not good. The omega-3 fats that you do want to eat are the fats found in fish or flaxseed oil and supplements. I take krill oil as a supplement. That's my favorite omega-3 because it's so pure. The other thing is that I prepare all of my food in coconut oil, which is not an omega fat. But it's a medium chain fat, and it's amazing. It practically converts immediately to energy, so you really don't store it at all. And what it does is it's awesome for the brain, and it's good for you in general. But it's good for the neurological system, and it's great energy source. So I don't use much. Olive oil or any of the other oils that I just mentioned that are omega-6 oils. I don't use many of those oils because I'm so determined to get as much coconut oil as I can. I put a couple of heaping tablespoons of it in my coffee in the morning. I'm not drinking coffee anymore, in my tea. And I try to get as much of it into my body as I can. I bake with it. I stir fry in it. I made pork chops in it last night that were seriously the most delicious. I literally devoured them like the carnivore that I am, I guess. Anyway, those are the oils that it's not. The myth is that it's the most likely cause of skin cancer is overexposure to the sun. No. The research is very clear, and it keeps coming in over and over again. It's probably the ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 fat, and the fact that it's too high of a ratio for most people, and not the sun. Myth: sunburn or skin damage from the sun is what causes skin cancer. Nope. The truth is, researchers found that sun damage to the skin was associated with increased survival for melanoma. That's right, you heard me. If you have damaged your skin and your skin was burned, it actually increased your survival for melanoma. Mm-hmm. And this is Berwick and Armstrong. Actually, it's four or five different studies, and I'll put those up in a PowerPoint for you. I'm not going to read them all. First of all, I can barely read them because they're in about a four font. But in any case, the research is in. That is the truth. Sunburn or skin damage from the sun doesn't cause skin cancer. It actually appears to have a protective mechanism. Not saying you should go out and burn your skin. Definitely not saying that. But I am saying that if you burned your skin when you were younger and you're getting moderate amounts of sun now and you're careful about the way you get your sun, you started out with something that oddly enough protects you. And if you continue to do that today, you are building, you're supporting your immune system. You are helping yourself to avoid cancer, including melanoma. Sunbathing and sunburn are detrimental to health. Truth: in a large study in Denmark and Sweden, 3,700 people with malignant lymphoma were compared to 3,200 people without cancer. They found that high frequencies of sunbathing and sunburning before age 21 were associated with reduced risk of developing non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Again, really good research, very, very nice study, and large sample. Sunbathing, so the myth was sunbathing and sunburn are detrimental to health. And in this particular study, with a fairly large sample, they found that high frequencies of sunbathing and sunburning before age 21 were associated with reduced risk of developing non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. If you understand about cholesterol sulfate and vitamin D3, and that it's very important to get it, and to get it from the get-go, to get it while you're actually in utero is a good idea, then you understand why that is not such a shocking thing. Again, and I'm going to keep saying this over and over again, not recommending burning your skin. Be very careful not to ever burn your skin. But for those of us who did burn our skin as teenagers, I was a lifeguard, I was always getting burned. At least I don't have to live in quite the fear that I have until reading this research, actually, I guess. And neither do you if you have had sunburns in the past. Just don't want to do it anymore. Okay, myth: sunscreen is good for you and should be worn at all times when outdoors. Truth: sunscreen is not good for you. It contains several ingredients that are harmful, two of which have been linked: vitamin A or retinol palmitate or retinol, is linked to increased cancer cell growth. Aluminum, which may act as a pro-oxidant, and that could significantly increase the potential for oxidative damage in the skin and ultimately lead to skin cancer. That's aluminum. And powder or spray mineral-based sunscreens, usually the ingredient reads as zinc oxide or titanium oxide, are very damaging if inhaled. The other ingredient is oxybenzone, and that's a hormone disruptor, and experts caution against using it, especially with children. Finally, there are, as I mentioned earlier, two different types of sun rays, UVA and UVB. UVA is mostly the blame for wrinkles, leathery skin, and sunspots, and UVB, which is the main contributor to skin cancer, is also the type of light that we want that maximally creates vitamin D3 and cholesterol sulfate in the skin. So again, it's the UVB that's been associated with cancer in the past. This new research calls that into question, but in any case, it's also something to pay a lot of attention to. just limited amounts. You don't need very much at all to create sun. You don't need very much sun at all to create the cholesterol sulfate and the vitamin D3. So why would you risk it? My thinking is you just don't need to. The majority of the sunscreens only protect from UVB. They don't protect from UVA. And again, UVA is what mostly what causes wrinkles, leathery skin, and sunspots. So who wants that, right? Nobody. All right. So this whole thing about the sun and the manner in which we have sort of demonized the sun, I think it might be helpful. It was for me to think about what would happen if the sun went out. I mean, if the sun went out, the first thing that we would notice is the dark, of course. We would have moonlight for a while, but in general, it would be very dark. There would no longer be a night and day as we know it, even though the Earth would still rotate on its axis. That doesn't have anything to do with the sun. It's not clear how long we would have electricity, but it would discontinue after a certain point, and then it would be very dark. In a very short period of time, the Earth would lose its heat without the sun. It's obviously the source of our warmth. After a week, the warmest places on the planet would be 0 degrees Fahrenheit. In a matter of months, the average temperature would be around minus 100 degrees Fahrenheit. And most of us would not survive unless we lived directly under a thermal feature. Most of us wouldn't survive unless we lived over a thermal feature. Not like a volcano or something that's very, very warm. Life at the bottom of the sea in some parts of the world would be a little warmer, but it would be hard for many of us to live there. Of course, the next problem would be food. The food sources on Earth are almost all grown from the energy of the sun. You grow very little food without the sun. As you could say, mushrooms. I can't think of anything else. Global food stores are currently at a record low. So the population could not survive very long on current reserves, maybe a few months to a year. It's not really clear how that would work. And then there's the problem of gravity. Scientists tell us that as soon as the Earth goes dark, it will come unmoored from the gravitational pull that the sun normally exerts, and it'll start moving off into space in a straight line. Great. In other words, the sun literally is the center of our universe, and it absolutely anchors us to our spot in our galaxy. Without it, we would be set adrift. And we probably would run into another planet at some point, in which case it would wipe out all remaining survivors. So in a nutshell, if the sun goes out, we might just as well go with it. As long as we have the sun, we survive as a planet, and we have the potential to prosper as a species. It is our source of warmth. It lights up our days. And it provides us with the foods we love. I think this is kind of the way my dog feels about me. The fact that we cannot survive without the sun is not news. What most people don't know is that just as the planet needs the sun, so too do humans need the sun. Regular sun on your skin protects your immune system, your cardiovascular system, your nervous system, your hormones, and the walls of literally every single cell in your body. Without sun exposure, you are at risk for obesity, vascular disease, neurological disorders, cancer, autoimmune disorders, and premature aging. Children are even more at risk for learning disorders, cavities, weaker bones, shorter stature, early onset diabetes, and much more. And I say they're more at risk because when these problems occur before they mature, it causes all sorts of weird developmental issues. So, for example, I see children now who are 10 years old who are obese, and I see teenagers who are 15 years old who already have metabolic syndrome. These have been disorders in the past of middle age, especially metabolic syndrome. We don't know what it means for a 15-year-old to have metabolic syndrome. We know that a 50 or 55-year-old has significantly limited his or her life expectancy by ending up with metabolic syndrome, maybe another 15 or 20 years, so maybe to 65, maybe 70. But what does it mean for a 15-year-old? Are we talking about 30, 35 years old? Hopefully not. But we don't know. We really don't know. So some of the myths about cholesterol are that cholesterol is bad. But the truth is, cholesterol is involved in every biological function. It makes our heart beat, and it allows the neurons in the brain to transmit messages. It allows us to it allows each cell to communicate. And by the way, that's what makes us different from plants and bacteria. So not only is it not bad, it's absolutely critical. I don't know if you know this, but cholesterol is basically the mother of all of our hormones. It is the master hormone. And as much as I have learned about cholesterol in the last 2 months, I didn't know that until I went to my doctor's office and he gave me this chart, and it had at the very top left-hand corner cholesterol. And from that flowed all of the hormones. I was once again blown away. I got a copy of the chart, going to use it, of course. Okay, next myth. LDL cholesterol is bad. LDL cholesterol isn't bad. It's part of the system that rids us of the gunk we pick up along the way when we eat polluted food and damaged fats and or too much sugar. So LDL cholesterol it's a necessary evil. We have to have something. If we ate nothing but clean food, LDL cholesterol would be transporting other things, because it's not just the bad stuff, but it has to transport those damaged fats, among other things. And as such, because it's transporting damaged things, it is more susceptible to damage itself. The HDL cholesterol is what comes along and cleans everything up. So it takes what the LDL cholesterol has, cleans it up, and puts it back out as something innocuous. That's when everything is working well. That's when it has enough cholesterol sulfate. But without the cholesterol sulfate, the HDL cholesterol is overwhelmed. The liver gets bogged down, and we end up with the LDL cholesterol rising, and that's the least of your worries at that moment. All right, myth. If I have high cholesterol, taking a statin will prolong my life. Truth. Nope. Not only do statins not prolong your life, they may shorten it and or make you more susceptible to stroke, heart attack, Alzheimer's, cancer, diabetes, etc. So no. If you have high cholesterol, taking a statin is not your best bet. Getting a UVB lamp and sitting in the sun is your best bet. Also, eating as clean as you possibly can will take some of the load off of the system. Myth, high cholesterol causes heart attacks. No, it's actually not high cholesterol that causes heart attacks. It's actually a deficiency of cholesterol sulfate that causes heart attacks. And the reason for that is that the heart must have cholesterol sulfate. If it doesn't, it has to go through all kinds of weird antics in order to create it and supply it to the heart. And in the process of doing that, it creates plaque in the arteries. It's what's left over. I know there's a good word for this. You're all probably sitting there thinking of the word that I'm trying to remember and think of. But in any case, it's the byproduct, to use a technical term, of the process of creating cholesterol sulfate. And it's not a good byproduct. It clogs our arteries, causes heart disease, and eventually can cause a catastrophic stroke or heart attack. All right, myth, high cholesterol causes Alzheimer's. Truth, the brain needs cholesterol for the most important process in the brain, and that's myelination. Dementia actually appears to be driven by glycation, and that means inflammation brought on by too much sugar and lack of a certain type of cholesterol called B cholesterol. Guess what? The B stands for brain, so it's just brain cholesterol. But no, it's not high cholesterol that causes Alzheimer's. To the contrary, you're much more likely to end up with Alzheimer's if you limit the amount of cholesterol you have in your body by taking a statin. That's why your chances of having Alzheimer's if you're on statins is significantly higher. Myth, saturated fats cause high cholesterol. No. Saturated fats offer protection. Sugar and glycation is the culprit, along with damaged fats. So damaged polyunsaturated and monounsaturated fats are what you have to watch out for, not saturated fats. Coconut oil is almost all saturated, and it is the best thing that ever happened to your brain. Bruce Fife wrote an entire book on Stop Alzheimer's Now, and basically, in a nutshell, one of his most important suggestions is to load up on the saturated fat coconut oil. He also talks about glycation quite a bit and talks about a ketogenic diet, which is a diet that eliminates as much sugar as possible, and with basically a low-carb diet and a high-fat diet. That's what's good for the brain. So in a nutshell, cholesterol does it all. In the brain, cholesterol makes up the myelin sheath, and it insulates against signal loss. In the heart, it allows the heart muscle to beat. In the membranes and cells, it promotes cell communication. It allows our cells to move. It gives them their permeability. It prevents leaks in the cells, and it protects cells from pathogens like microbes. In the blood, cholesterol makes up part of the lipoproteins LDL and HDL. It's essential for protecting the contents in the blood from oxidation or free radicals and from glycation or inflammation brought on by too much sugar. Cholesterol is the precursor to all steroid hormones, as I mentioned earlier, beginning with pregnenolone. These hormones regulate, like everything, but to be specific, blood sugar, mineral balance and blood pressure, mineral corticoids, the sex hormones, testosterone and estrogen, vitamin D, and cortisone, the stress hormone. Cholesterol, finally, aids in the digestion of fat. If you don't have the right cholesterol, it's very difficult for your liver to digest fat. It's much harder for your liver to digest fat. So we're running out of time a little bit here, but I do want to talk just briefly about a few of the myths about vitamin D. Myth, vitamin D is just vitamin D. Wrong. Truth, vitamin D3 is what we need, not vitamin D2. Myth, if we supplement with vitamin D3, we can prevent the illnesses associated with vitamin D3 deficiency. Nope. The truth is we need to get the vitamin D3 from the sun. Getting it from a bottle isn't as effective. It will make your vitamin D3 levels go up, but apparently it doesn't have much effect on the disorders and diseases and conditions associated with vitamin D3 deficiency. All right, that is it for this evening. I hope this was informative, and I look forward to the next show, and please join us for our next show. We are going to be talking about how vitamin D impacts various disorders specifically, and what those disorders are, and what foods and what strategies you can use if you are suffering from some of the most virulent problems in our society right now, one of which, of course, is obesity. We're going to talk next week about how cholesterol deficiency and vitamin D deficiency are driving a lot of obesity. Dr. Senef touched on that a little bit in her show last week, but we're going to expand on that. And just in general, we're going to talk about some of the conditions that I see a lot of in my private practice and that are absolutely, totally resolving with the addition of the cholesterol, I'm just going to say it that way, the sun, which provides us with cholesterol, sulfate, and vitamin D3, but with the addition of the sun, we're just seeing really cool, remarkable, counterintuitive changes taking place. And so we'll talk a little bit more about that. Thank you for joining us. Eat clean, commit to be fit, and live your life wisely. Good night.